McCool.
McCool. You could say that. You could say that.
You could say that.
I should be arrested.
And, it's been tailored to a fine point.
Ooh! So, lovely! So,
there you
lovely.
Go. Mr. Nice McCool. Play there, Sean. Nice play.
There you go. To get Jonathan involved. Yeah, no, it's a good question. And we met through some friends, and we were in kind of a little weekly kind of mastermind where we just kind of get together and talk.
Not a cult, mastermind.
Not a cult, just a little mastermind. And
business mastermind.
A lot of it fell apart, but then Jonathan and I kind of kept in touch, and we would meet up at this like a franchise type pub that they have over here in Tennessee,
or Casual Pint.
Casual Pint, that's the name of it.
That's right.
So we would just talk shop, and Jonathan's in sales, and mm-hmm. I'm copywriter, marketing. That's what I've been doing for the last.
I was just going to ask you guys that
10 okay, years. I was in sales sense. Before that. My dad was a salesman, so that's what I fell into.
So we love talking marketing, yeah. sales, persuasion. You know, Sean being a copywriter. You know, and so yeah, I know, and you with your background, obviously. In hypnotherapy and I'm sure that to a degree in Hollywood, people think that, you know, probably people think that your agent's out there doing all the work for you. And I think that that's total, you know, people completely have it all wrong. Cause there's a lot of hustle involved in sales and marketing, right?
It's all hustle.
Yeah.
It's all,
yeah.
If I'm not picking up the phone, if yeah. I'm not sending emails, if I'm not going out to parties, which look like parties, but it's really a work, that's mm-hmm. a work evening for me.
Sure.
If I'm not doing that, nothing's going to happen, man.
Right. Nothing. Right. Wow. Yeah, it's all right about connections, that. You know, networking connections.
It's like anything, right? Yeah. Any business is built on relationship.
Sure.
Just like yeah. we're coming back into cult. It's all relationship. It's all emotional. It's so funny because you guys can attest to this because you've worked in sales and now you're involved in marketing.
Yeah.
I remember when I first got in sales, I was like, this is some bullshit. I'm spending all this time having to explain and educate the prospect, yeah. whoever I'm talking to, mm-hmm. they need information to know what's up before I even get here. Why waste my time? Right.
Right.
That's yep. what got me interested in marketing. But,
well, that's what I say. I tell people we're all in sales, you know, I don't care what you're doing in life. Preach. We're all in sales. Okay. That's so right. You're selling in your industry, whatever that industry is.
That's right. You're selling your friend when you're telling them about a movie you saw.
Exactly.
They have to see.
That's right.
You're selling your wife when you say, oh baby, we got to go to this restaurant.
Yeah.
Yep. You're selling your kid. Listen, man, you don't want to do that because I'm going to put a rusty spike through your chest.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, maybe not. Yeah. Anyway, just kidding. Maybe that was just my childhood. I got threatened that way.
I saw.
Jonathan and I are from Georgia, from the South. So
that's right.
We got threatened Georgia. with switches and like pick your own switch off that bush in the front yard.
Okay. That was, what is that about?
Yeah, really. Yeah. Right. What part of Georgia is your wife from?
She's from Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. How about you guys?
I'm from Well, I grew up in both Augusta and Athens. Yeah. Just outside of Athens.
Go yep. Dogs.
Go Dogs. Yeah. We're both Georgia guys. So.
All right.
We got the weekend off this weekend. So.
You know, it's interesting. You do have the weekend off, don't you?
Yes.
You guys got a damn good.
I don't know what to do with my hands this weekend because I'm like, no remotes.
I'm sure people can give you some suggestions.
Yes.
I got involved in marketing when I got out of the cult the second time, when I escaped for good in late 96. Mm-hmm. My parents had bought a small print and copy shop, and I became the marketing and sales guy. And I discovered, and I don't remember how, it doesn't matter, but, you know, direct response marketing. This was really before the internet had even really taken off, you know. Mm-hmm. Email was a thing.
Right.
The web was a thing. You know, the TV networks were starting to say, you can find us at NBC.com and stuff like that.
Sure.
But, you know, I wasn't. You know, it just wasn't as big as it is now. And these direct response marketers caught my attention because they were talking about writing 8-page, you know, letters. And I was like, 8 pages.
Wow.
But they were effective and they were working and stuff. And So I kind of just dove into it. And in doing that, two things happened. I was able to increase the sales of the business by 400% within a year and a half before the internet. So I was like licking stamps and putting on envelopes and mailing stuff out and all kinds of other things. And my parents were subsequently able to sell the business and retire. But I didn't expect any of this.
Yeah.
I started to understand the power of the written word and the spoken word, mm-hmm. and the levers of persuasion, and that a lot of these cats in internet marketing / direct response marketing, because that's what internet marketing is now. I think it's funny. They're like internet marketers.
Yeah.
It's all you are is a direct response marketer. You don't know what you come from.
Right.
Whose shoulders exactly. you're standing on. They get dark and they master the arts of dark persuasion, which mm-hmm. is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it becomes very cult-like, ironically.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And there was a guy, he's still out there. His real name is Ross Paul, but he calls himself Paul Jeffries. Mm-hmm. Ross Jeffries. And he had a thing called like the speed seduction or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I had to go meet this guy and I met him and he's a trip. He doesn't even believe half the bullshit that he writes. He kept on trying to convince me and my buddy this night. That's my marketing personality. That's my marketing personality. I'm like, well, bitch, that's what you say all the time. So, you know, I mean, you got to own it at some point, but you know, I digress. The thing was, I realized that, oh shit, this was used on me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is crazy. Mm-hmm. And so then I was like, I have to learn NLP. And so I went and learned it and became a master practitioner and got my, you know, my certificate as well as my certificate for hypnosis, the hypnotherapist.
Yeah.
And it's a trip. I mean, you guys know, you've talked about it, I'm sure, a million times. But
have you ever read Cialdini, Robert Cialdini's the...
Cialdini, absolutely.
Yeah, Cialdini, yeah. Yeah. So I find it always interesting when, you know, backing up on the cults, one of the things he talks about is commitment and consistency. That's one of the principles of influence that he talks about. And, you know, in every cult, you know, I was just thinking, you know, backing up to, well, we could talk about marketing, we could talk about cults, but he's talking about in the book, how people, once they commit to something, you know, they want to be consistent. They want to be, they don't want to look irrational, right?
That's right.
Unless it's a diet, then it's like, no.
A man or a woman they're interested in.
That's right. Yeah.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. The tummy and the groin, right?
Yep.
The loins.
Yeah. Yep.
He's right about that. It's always interesting when I first read his stuff, because he's so, you know, he's academic. He's a professor of it.
Yeah.
So he's removed from it emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
But man, does that brother break it down.
Oh, he's amazing.
You know, first of all, you will never affect any change in your life until you change your identity of yourself.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
And so that's what he's talking about when he says, when people make a commitment to something, even if it's a small micro commitment,
mm-hmm.
they will do whatever they have to maintain the identity that they've given themselves,
yeah.
real or perceived in their mind, with this person they're talking with or with this group they're involved in. That's a great point, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, one of the questions that when I'm writing copy that I always try to answer for the reader is, am I the type of person who would buy this product or this service or whatever it is, right? So you got to get them saying yes to that. Because if they don't see themselves as a person, you know, and you do that through, you know, 6 or 7 different types of proof, but you have to let them see that I'm the type of person. And, you know, if we go to Hollywood, I mean, right? I mean, that's what trailers do for movies. Like, you want the trailer to resonate with the type of person that usually watches that type of movie.
Sure.
If you want to get a new audience, then you'd have to do a different type of trailer that would bring in. So if you've got more of a mystery movie, you know, I think of like M. Night Shyamalan. I can't say his last name.
You said it right. Shyamalan.
Shyamalan Bing Dong, something like that. like, so if you look at his, it's kind of on the line between like mystery and horror, depending on who you talk to. Like, so you'd have to have a different type of trailer to pull both of those audiences in.
Yeah.
To say, oh yeah, I'm the kind of person that would watch that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, so, they do split testing, like, you know, in copywriting world, the marketing world, you got to split test this headline against this headline, this ad against this ad copy, and then, of course, this trailer against this trailer. And in movies, you know, this ending versus this ending, you know. You got to see what they resonate to and what's going to sell and what's going to get that return on the dollar.
And how do they do that? That's interesting. Like, how do they do that before the movie's released?
Well, they have businesses out here that specifically hire, you know,
focus groups,
how to work actors and models and, you know, whatever. Anybody they can get, warm body, who's going to show up. And then they know most people won't show up because they maybe have a drinking problem, drug problems,
sure,
you know, don't have any money, whatever the hell's going on in their life. And then they go out there and they try to, you know, say, hey, I see you, you know, John. I'd be like, hey, man, listen, I got two tickets to the new, you know, whatever movie. You want to go see it? You just got to have to answer a short questionaire afterwards.
Oh, so it's
totally free.
It's a timeshare presentation.
Timeshare presentation, amazing.
Hey, I did sell timeshare for a while.
So you did. Yeah.
Talk about a cult.
He
had to shower for 2 weeks after he got out of that.
I did, man. I lasted about a month, and I was like, whoa, this is some weird stuff.
That stuff is just, that's nefarious. They're devious. Yeah.
It was crazy.
As I call them, they're shit weasels.
South Park did a great episode on it. So I don't know who the writer was of that.
Is it amazing that those two guys who were influenced by Mormonism and then lived in Denver, I believe, come to Hollywood and they're like, yeah, let's just take a piss at everything. We'll just make it a cartoon.
Yeah.
Here they are now. What is it? 25 years later.
Yeah, cows there. They're everything's open.
You can get away with murder. Talking about influence. You can get away with murder.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can get away with the most horrific stuff you can imagine. Taboo subjects, sexual topics that are out of bounds, religious, anything.
Right. Yeah.
If it's a cartoon.
If it's a cartoon, that's amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
It's true.
Right. And at the end of each show, they kill Kenny, you know? Respect my authority, you know? And then everyone starts laughing. They're like,
So I'm curious, what's your favorite? You've been on both sides. You've played the bad guy, and then you played a good guy. I guess. I mean, you call it a good guy, but so what? What's your favorite role to play?
Bad guy.
Bad guy. Day. Yeah, yeah.
Every day, it's way more fun.
Yeah.
You're not. So when you play the good guy, you're hamstrung.
Yeah.
You know, you've always got to have that big smile, right? And you've always got to say something really sweetly,
right?
You know,
right?
And which is all fine and great, but I'm amping it up a little bit,
sure.
But the bad guy, the bad girl, the bad woman, whatever, you don't have any governor on you,
no,
yeah,
at all. There really are no walls. There are no boundaries that you can't cross, and that is fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I mean. It's just so much fun.
You're an intimidating bad guy too. I got to tell you.
You know, I have resting bitch face. But it's just, if I don't smile,
I mean, you got the high. You know, you're 6'3". You know, you. Right. I mean, you play it really well. I mean, I've watched
Thank you.
Yeah, so it's you're very intimidating.
I never realized how true that was. Until I got into Hollywood and then, you know, the casting process and the casting directors and just the whole casting process, it's really kind of interesting and mind blowing at the same time, because you realize, oh, wow, this is how I'm viewed. This is how people see me. Like, I was always playing these white, rich, frequently racist, frequently conservative, frequently nasty guys who were authority figures, presidents, prime ministers, CEOs, billionaires.
Yep.
And
like Silicon Valley, you played the,
I played a billionaire in Silicon Valley. Yep. And, you know, it's weird because then, so that's not really who I am.
Right.
But I can play that, sure. Mm-hmm. And I do, you know, I am tall. I do have a deep voice. And if I don't smile, it does look like I may disembowel you or take your head off. I don't know. I like to keep that open.
Sure. Yeah.
But Yeah, but you know, then you get on the set, and for example, so on Silicon Valley, the night that I shot, it was a night shoot, and I get there and I find out that I'm going up against, I don't know if you guys remember, T.J. Miller played Ehrlichman, and Jimmy Yang played, what do you call him?
Yeah.
Chang, or Yang. And Yang. These guys are both stand-up comedians, and they're no slouches. And it's like, let's just improv this. And I'm like, yeah, let's just improv it because that'll be fun. Yeah, I just have to keep up with two trained comedians.
Sure, right.
Sure, no pressure.
Yeah.
But I did, and we had a lot of fun doing it. Later, there was a break in between setting up a different shot, and Mike Judge is the creator of that show. He and Alec Berg, and Alec was directing that. And Mike was just kind of, he came onto the set that night to see what was up. We were at this mansion in Beverly Hills. And I saw him and he's like, hey, and I go, hey man, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And he kind of looked at me like, why the fuck are you talking to me? And I realized that I looked like most of the male extras. I was in a tuxedo and a bow tie, but they hadn't given me any like delineation, like a silver kerchief or like, you know, something to make me stand out. And so he thought, why is this extra talking to me? Go away or I'm going to fire you. Right. But what are you going to do? Everybody on the set treats me like I'm that guy. It's weird. Right. It's a weird place to be. So.
Wow. So what have you learned from all of, you know, you're studying both persuasion, you know, making your way out of the cult, all these different things. How do you apply that just like in day-to-day making it through Hollywood, which
good question.
You know, I mean, you've been there, you survived it a long time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people come and go. It's kind of like the NFL, not for long. Like
100%.
You know, so like, what have you done? What, how have you taken all these different understandings and learnings, or which ones have you found the most useful to apply to a career in Hollywood?
Wow. God, that's a really good question. That's a really good question. I knew I was going to like this podcast. I'm serious. I was like, persuasion.
We get deep sometimes. I mean, sometimes we go really deep.
That's what the alcohol is for. Gets a good question.
I can do small talk. Like it's part of my business.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like really, I don't give a fuck what Kim Kardashian wore. If Kanye had a mask on, great. Okay. What's next? I don't have a set answer. Mm-hmm. What I can say is this, that, I just did this interview for, Authority Magazine and Thrive Global. Mm-hmm. It's Arianna Huffington, is behind it, and it's these new online magazine. And I did this piece on resilience and, you know, I had to develop some resilience in my life for sure. And so that's always a part of my makeup, but it's been invaluable in Hollywood because like you said, it's not for long here. You know, everyone comes here and they're like, oh, I'm going to be a movie star in a month. I'm going to give myself a month or I'm going to give myself a year. People say that. And I'm like, okay, see you later.
Yeah.
You know, in my mind, I never would say that to them. Right. Cause I always hope for the best.
Sure.
But if you're thinking like that and I see you again in 2 months and you're still talking like that, man, you're on the clock already.
Yeah.
You have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to pivot on a dime. Improvisation, not only in a scene like I was talking about, but taking those same skills to life, it's invaluable.
Yeah.
And then as far as persuasion and influence goes, this happens everywhere, but we always get taken. We always take the brunt of the hits for it in Hollywood. And I suppose rightly so, because let's be honest, man, I just happen to have a job where I stand in front of a camera and like they polish my teeth and white my eyes and shine, you know, take the shine off my forehead and put me in a really beautiful suit and tie or some kind of other cool wardrobe. And then I say these lines that I didn't write.
Right.
And, you know, I put my take on it. People are like, I saw you on TV. Oh, my God. You're like, trust me when I tell you, I have to drop my pants and sit on the toilet just like you do. So, but the thing that is that emotional manipulation happens so frequently.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, It's really bad, man. And it's really one of the main traps that people get caught up in. It's one of the main traps in interpersonal relationships with one's spouse or loved one or girlfriend or boyfriend, amongst buddies, you know. Uh-huh. It's probably a little bit less with guys, but we always bitch out every once in a while. And that's no disparagement to the ladies, because guys are some of the biggest bitches I've ever met. But, being able to identify when I'm being emotionally manipulated, being able to identify when someone's like dangling a red herring and trying to create a straw man argument, it's invaluable in being able to navigate the waters. When I first started to do interviews and press or go to like, for example, here's a perfect example. When you go to an audition in Hollywood, what you don't realize at the time is that that is a meeting. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's less about what you think it is, which is about, how do I look? Do I sound great? Oh, what do they think of me? Although those things are at play, and it's more about they're looking at you like, so would I want to work with Sean? Could I stand to be on a movie set with that guy for the next 2 months? Or is he just going to be like always needy and wanting something? Is he funny? Does he know his lines? Can he take direction? What kind of, I don't know. That's what's going on there.
Sure.
And so you've always got to know how to put your best foot forward while still being yourself, and that's not easy. And that's one of the reasons this is like the NFL, the not for long league.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great point as a freelancer, one of the things that has made me successful is my ability to talk to clients and assure them of things like that. Like I'm going to be okay to work with that, projects, things like that. Jonathan, I know in your sales, they're buying your product, but they're buying you.
They buy from the person. Right.
Yeah. And they need to know that that person is going to, come in and do whatever's needed if something goes wrong or if there's a,
so what are we talking about?
Yeah.
We're talking about relationship. Mm-hmm. We're talking about trust, and both of those are built upon emotion.
Right.
Yep.
Right. You guys can speak. Would you guys agree everything is based in emotion?
Oh yeah. For the most part.
Yeah. I think we're definitely like how emotional about creatures first.
Oh, exactly. In the sales process and the marketing process, what are you appealing to? My logic or my emotion?
Emotion every time.
First.
Every time. And then what do? They come back in their mind and try to find logical reasons.
They justify it by logic every time. Yeah, exactly.
Boom. Yep. That's how people get caught in cults.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so hard. You can't think your way out of a cult. You have to feel your way out of brainwashing. You have to feel your way out of it. And
it's amazing. Cause we talk about, I'm trying to think of the term, gaslighting, right? Cause my wife and I go back and forth cause we banter. It's all play and I gaslight her a lot, but it's not serious gaslighting. It's pretend gaslighting.
It's minor. Yeah.
It's light gaslighting.
Your honesty is refreshing.
But no, I mean, you see a lot of that, everywhere, this day. And then if I'm sure your experience in a cult and even Hollywood and just so many play, so much of that plays into everything, where you have to question your own sanity. Like, people.
Oh yeah. 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 You're right. I mean, I have this real respect for both you guys because you work in sales and marketing so necessarily you understand, the human experience and human nature and human beings on a level that most people don't, they just don't.
Or choose not to.
Yeah. I was just going to say that.
Really or bury it. Yeah. I don't want to think about that.
And that's what I was talking about earlier, the burying it. You just push that feeling down, lock it away, and you never look at it again.
Right.
And I wish people wouldn't do that. I wish they would just like lean into it and just sit with it and be curious about it because that's the most healthy way to go.
Absolutely.
There's always gaslighting going on and there's always, that attempt to make you, it's emotional manipulation that you're crazy, that what you're seeing, what you're feeling and what you're hearing isn't what's happening, even though the emperor literally is not wearing any clothes.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's,
yeah, I can imagine when you were leaving this cult, there's probably a lot of gaslighting going on. Like, what are you, I mean,
when I left, there was a huge legal case, yeah. Me and my buddy and his now wife, then girlfriend. Mm-hmm. I can't get into everything now because it's a really long story, but the long and the short of it is we had a big legal case against us, and the police department threw a bunch of charges against us that were trumped up, and it was bad. And so I knew I had to get away, because that's when we kind of slid in. And this happens with all groups, all cults, all MLM groups, political factions, whatever. They slide, invariably, they slide to the far right. Mm-hmm. And you get involved necessarily with hate speech, with racists, mm-hmm. with nationalists, and white supremacists. That's just the facts. That's not my opinion. That's not conjecture. Those are facts, and you can look it up and double check me. And that's what happened with our group. We had begun that slide, and that's where we ended up going. And we got caught up with these guys that were part of these militia groups that were burgeoning. This was in 96. Mm-hmm. And so we'd already had the Waco incident in the country as a nation, and we already had Ruby Ridge.
Yep.
And we'd already had Oklahoma City. Mm. So three white supremacist, white nationalist, militia, conspiracy theorists, major terrorist, domestic terrorist attacks. And that's what these guys were. And they're like, oh man, you know, you don't even listen to those charges they filed. You know, you file this paperwork instead. And I was like, oh my God, this is so crazy. But everyone else was like, yeah, do that. And it made everything infinitely worse. Getting out of that situation was mission one for me.
Sure.
Second mission was, and it was kind of right in with mission one, I had to make them think that it was their idea. Mm-hmm. I'm not the brightest guy in the world. Trust me. I'm not. And I had to think how to get out of that. And while I was doing it, prepare myself to what you said for them to gaslight me. Now, we didn't even use that word in the 90s.
Sure.
But I knew they were going to come at me with a bunch of, I just call it bullshit. And how was I going to handle that? And to this day, I couldn't tell you how I did it. I just knew what I wanted to do and what I wanted to have happen. And that's what based every one of my decisions and actions from that point. But yeah, they did. You're right. They did. Wow.
Interesting.
Well, let me flip as we wind up here. Let me flip to a little bit lighter question, because this is something I've always been curious about. Right. I'll be watching a good show, and I just, as someone who writes, I get caught up, like I notice the writing, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Sometimes it ruins movies. Sometimes it makes it even better. Cause I'm like, that is such, it's like, oh, that's so good. Like the way they did that. Have you ever worked in like a writer's room where there's multiple writers? Like, I'm curious, like what that dynamic is. That's like one of my dreams, is to be in a writer's room and see that process. And I'm sure I'm like romanticizing it, but
well, you are a little bit. Of course. It
go ahead, like burst Sean's bubble.
I know, right?
Yeah, no. Writer's rooms smell faintly of desperation, body odor, and bad food decisions.
Okay,
I'll just let that sit for a while.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Writer's rooms are really interesting places because I'm making fun. They do stink normally because there's incredible pressure and you can't leave. So like your personal hygiene and burping and farting, that's a given. And you got to get the job done. And, you know, there's a lot of flop sweat. And there's a lot of stress sweat. And
yeah.
So that's why I make that joke. But that is based in reality. But for all of that, you know, it's not easy to get into a writer's room. You have to be proven. Mm-hmm. You have to have stuff that's good. You have to be known. You have to be a known entity. And then you have to, like we talked about earlier, is this someone I want to sit in a room with for hours at a time, crafting an entire season or seasons of this series, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And because, man, there's nothing worse than you're sitting in a room and I make like, you just can't stand me and I can't stand you. Like, how the fuck is any creativity going to come out of that?
Yeah.
That's like, right. That's a chokehold. You're dead.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting place to be. And it's also, but for me, the thing that's most fascinating, I'll never forget. I went to an audition, what lot was I on? Warner's. I was on the Warner's lot, Warner Brothers. And Conan's show was there. Mm-hmm. And his offices were right next to this casting director's office. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I'm sitting in the waiting room and it's just me and one other woman. And it was like, I don't know, 10 o'clock in the morning. And next door, and the walls are pissed thin, is the writer's meeting. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to Conan and his writers, and they're pitching him ideas, and he's summarily dismissing this idea, and they're rolling with that one, and that idea stops, and it goes off. Remember that time when we were in Venice, and you shit your pants on the hotel steps? And they're going on for 20 minutes, and I'm just like, amazing. If I just, I should just turn my phone on and record this, because no one would believe it. Yeah. You know? And so, like, that's the fun part of it. Yeah. But what you don't realize, if you don't know, like, I'm making fun and having telling you the truth at the same time, but that type of thing is necessary because it breeds creativity. And it breeds creativity because it loosens and frees the spirit so that there aren't taboo topics. I can swear. I can make bad jokes, right? Mm-hmm. I can be socially and, psychologically and whatever inappropriate. Because you need that kind of freedom in order to find the solution to your problem.
Sure.
Okay. How is Mary going to divorce Steve while she's got to prepare for this life and death, this death penalty sentence tomorrow in front of the Supreme Court? Dun, yeah. Dun, dun. Right? Mm-hmm. There you go, man. That's the best answer I can give you right now. Yeah. Without another Stella, which I already finished.
Well, I think that's cool. I've always wondered what that's like. And I know there's a, like you said, the stinky side. I can see how that would certainly happen. I think because I write a lot of stuff alone. So it's, there's those days.
That's
it's
tough,
like,
man.
It's like, there's those Tip days you're like, you. Hey, can I just get like three people in here and we just put this on a whiteboard and just start.
Yeah.
Banging it out.
I wasn't going to get into that, but that's the other cool part because they do have the whiteboard and then they do have the cork board or, whatever they have, like a felt covered board. And they've got the whole, each season, on different colored index cards. And that they still use that frequently, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Even to this day. I mean, I think almost everyone does because you need to have a visual. I'm in the middle of writing. I'm solitary, I'm writing by myself. And I'm like, fuck, why can't I just like have like four people here and I could bounce this off of them right now and I could solve this problem in about 10 minutes or less. Yeah, but it's exactly. Just me. And then I get hungry and then my ear itches and then, the phone rings or whatever's going on. It's nuts. And like I keep on saying to myself, like you just said, Sean, I wish I had up in front of me the whole board and I could see each chapter. And like, but I'm not set up to do that here at the house because we're in the middle of a pandemic and. But that's the cool part of it too, because it makes it easier. And then like with anything, 10 heads or even 6 heads are better than one every day of the week.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where digital, word processing or, has actually stifled creativity a little bit.
I agree.
Cause you can't, you used to have to lay stuff out or, it was more tangible. And I think, Jonathan and I both bought these new Remarkable tablets that they're like handwriting.
Oh wow.
But it's a tablet. They're not connected to anything. So you're not an iPad. So you're not getting notifications and all that kind of stuff, but they're pretty cool. And that's helped me a little bit. Like if I need to go outside and just sit somewhere and still write,
right.
And capture it, be able to convert it.
Oh, that's digitally. Brilliant.
But it's kind of a fun tool, but I think having a writing buddy is something more people should do, including myself.
But then when you get I can't speak to copywriting, but in my world in Hollywood, whenever you have a partner come in, then things get complicated.
Yeah.
Whose idea was it?
Right.
Who wrote that?
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And then you have to have a high level of trust.
Yeah.
High level of trust.
No doubt. Well, Dar, this has been fantastic. We really appreciate your time. I know it's gone over a lot longer than what we
had, I haven't even looked. Have we gone over a while? Where are we at?
No, I mean, we're happy. Right, I mean, I hope we haven't kept you, but it's been fun. I blocked out
2 hours because okay. I thought, you know what? These cats are talking about persuasion. I just have a feeling this is going to be a little bit more interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This has been great. Honestly. Great.
Tell us a little, give us a little preview when you think, you know, when the book, you know, you're writing this book, what's the,
I've got the mother load of the book done. What I'm doing now is I'm doing my own first formatting of it.
Okay.
I'm going to have I've got editors. I've got friends. We're going to be doing passes at it, like not passes, but editing and helping with the formatting. And I think it's writing.
Yeah.
I hope I have it done within the next month. It could happen sooner. It could happen a little bit longer, but I haven't settled on a title yet.
Yeah.
Haven't settled on, but I wasn't going to let that hamstring me. Some people never start the first word because they can't think of a title.
Exactly.
Don't do that to yourself. Yep.
Nope. Yeah. Exactly.
I get in that sometimes. I want the title first, but then I invariably find the best titles come somewhere.
After you start writing, mm-hmm. it kind of just jumps out of you or just comes out of your subconscious. You're like, oh my God, that's it.
Yeah. Same with subject lines for emails.
And sometimes the publisher changes the title. Whatever you come up with, they'll change it. So, I mean, it's like, dang it. What? I mean, why did I even try?
Yeah. That's a whole other thing. I may get a publisher down the road. I may try to get this published by one of the big houses. But
sure.
I'm not putting that pressure on top of myself. I'm going to self-publish this first one. If it happens later, if there's another iteration or two, which I think there will be, so be it. If I'm starting my memoir right after it, talking about the cult because everyone wants to know about it. By the way, guys, I never used to talk about this.
Yeah.
For 20 some odd years, I didn't want to be viewed through that frame, you know, that lens of cult guy. And now I don't care.
Sure.
And I have a facility where I can talk about it. I mean, back in the day, if I tried to talk about it, I'd get choked up and I'd start crying and I wouldn't stop for 20 minutes. Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, how can people find out more? I know you've got a website. You also have a podcast, The Art of Being Dar.
And, The Art of Being Dar with Dar Dixon.
Yeah.
You can go to my podcast. Mm-hmm. That's going to probably drastically start to change as I start to talk about the subject matter of the book and the cult and more. I really haven't leaned into that too much. You can go to my website, dardixon.com, D-A-R-D-I-X-O-N. And then you can also go and see what I've been up to in Hollywood on IMDb.com, Internet Movie Database. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I heard you say that. I didn't think about that. I've done so many gigs. But, you know, IMDb only puts up, you know, the ones that are professional.
Oh, I know. Like
being, you know, union gigs.
That's right.
And, you know, most actors aren't as fortunate as the A-list. And so you've got to get your hustle on. And frequently, even with A-listers, you know, with very rare exceptions, what you see listed on something like IMDb or any of these other sites that claim to have people's, you know, film credits.
Yeah.
It's far more extensive than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like when I'm on Netflix or Amazon Prime Video, it's like, you pick a movie by an A-list actor and then it'll say also appeared in, and you see all these other movies. You're like, really? I had no idea they were an extra in Sharknado. Amazing.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah. The hustle is real. Yeah. We're friends with Samuel L. Jackson and his wife Latanya.
Oh, cool! Oh,
and,
man,
they actually, you know, we went to their house for dinner one night. And there were a bunch of other people there. I won't name drop because Marlon Brando told me never to do that.
That's awesome.
Thank you. but
I know.
It was a cool party, but at one point, Sam took me up to his office. And he's like, Dar, come on, let's go check out the office. All right, let's go, Sam. So we go upstairs and we go to his office, and it's like, you walk in there. And now, you know, at the time he wasn't, but as of 2 years ago, he is the biggest box office star in the history of Hollywood.
Oh yeah.
Which I think is fucking fantastic. But it's a black.
He's in everything. I mean,
I love his Capital One commercials.
Oh yeah.
That's right. You were in that.
Yeah.
You were in that. He's like, oh man, come on, man. You know, brother can't turn down work. And we started laughing and stuff. It was really pretty cool. It was really pretty cool. I'm not a big Star Wars fan, but you know, he did do Mace Windu. He was in Star Wars.
Sure. Yeah.
And
people forget
everything
that.
Everything in the office, man. Yeah. The thing he liked the most was like, hold the lightsaber. And I was like, yeah, okay. And you know, I just saw the look in his face and he was just like beaming. And he's done Pulp Fiction and The Hateful Eight and you know, True Romance, Do the Right Thing. Like, dude, it's unbelievable. Snakes in a Plane, all this stuff. And he's sitting here and he's got this smile like a kid because I'm holding the lightsaber. And I was like, wow, man. If I could figure out something that has that effect on an audience and like a Star Wars thing, that type of a story, that's something to think about.
So we'll end on this. Do you think Dune's going to be a box office hit? Yes or no?
Wow. I'm not a science fiction fan. I saw the original Dune. I sat next to my friend who's a huge Dune fan, and he was trying to explain to me what was going on. And I had no idea.
That releases today as we're recording this. So
yeah, I don't know. I'm hearing the same thing. People are like, I was underwhelmed. It was confusing, and I felt about the first one. That's how I felt about the first one too. I was lost. I don't know where they're gonna go with it.
Yeah, be interesting to see if they can update it for modern times. So.
I think the spice really affects everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. By the way, Samuel Jackson, his meme, he's got a lot of meme cred from, what is it, Pulp Fiction. That's where he gets his meme cred from.
And by the way, if I could have a career where I was known for one word, you mother...
MF.
Someone sent me a meme, and it's Sam sitting in a car, and I don't know what film it's from, but he's sitting in a car, he's got his glass on, he's just got his game face on, and it says, get in the car, motherfucker, we're going to go do motherfuckering. And I was like, amazing.
Yeah, I would say.
Oh, man. I could watch that one scene forever where he says, say what one more time? You know, Pulp Fiction.
What?
Pow.
You know, we went to Sam's birthday party 2 years ago. He turned 70. Mm-hmm. And he was in New York because LaTanya was on Broadway doing To Kill a Mockingbird. And it was amazing.
Yeah.
You get a chance to go to Sam's birthday party. You go to that party. It's the part. It's like every party that Hollywood portrays in the movies.
Yeah.
It's that cool. It was awesome, amazing. And it was supposed to be like a speakeasy type of thing. And so Sam was dressed in, you know, that era, you know, that kind of era of clothing. Mm-hmm. And when I got up close to him, he took his jacket off because it was too hot and everyone was dancing and stuff. And, but on his jacket, he had them, I don't know how they did it, but in the fabric was written every title of every single film he did.
Wow.
Like,
damn.
That's cool.
You filled the entire inside of your jacket lining with your film, with your resume?
That's awesome.
That's cool.
All right, Jonathan, I'll let you wrap it up.
Thank you so much. Again, Dar Dixon, you can find him over at dardixon.com. Dar, it's been a pleasure, man. We will be posting a link, also sharing your podcast, which I've subscribed to, and I've actually started the first three episodes, your first three, and good stuff, man. So I would encourage people to check that out.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You never know. Like you guys know, you never know if this is going to hit or miss.
You never know. We're going to send you to the green room for a second. We'd love to catch up after a minute or two. We're going to close out the show and stay tuned.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Thanks. Good stuff, man. Loved it. Enjoyed that. It's kind of fascinating. Yeah. Take a little sneak peek, you know, from somebody who's been there, done that from a number of different angles, right? Hollywood. Cults.
Yeah. I feel like our show just took a whole nother level up or down.
Exactly.
I'm not sure. Who knows? Let the ratings tell us.
That's right. I think this will be a two-parter. But it's good. So
have the main show and then an after party in true like
there you go. There you go. All right. For all of our listeners out there, thanks for, as always, for tuning in. You can catch us, persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your platforms, Stitcher Radio, iHeart, Spotify, you name it. And Sean, it's been a pleasure. We will see you all next week.
See ya.